15 gennaio 2008. Venezia. Alison Gingeras e Jeff Koons. Quello che state per ascoltare è il primo incontro della serie Aspettando Punta della Dogana, promosso da Palazzo Grassi in collaborazione con lo UAV e l'Università Ca' Foscari di Venezia.
I'd like to start by thanking Jeff for asking me to accompany him in this first art conversation, which is, as everyone has said, in the perspective of the opening of the Punta della Dogana Museum, and we being the François Pinault collection, of which I am the curator, along with the staff of Palazzo Grassi, felt that it was really important to inaugurate this series by asking Jeff Koons to join us, as he is probably one of the most emblematic artists of the François Pinault collection. Just as a point of background, Jeff Koons and I have worked together or known each other since about 1996, when I was a young curator at the Guggenheim Museum, and it was at the moment when Jeff was starting his celebration series. As a way of introduction, we are hoping to just have a really organic conversation guided by some images of Jeff's and some other images to help the conversation. And I think what we would like to do is try and structure this talk, in the beginning at least, around the last decade of Jeff's work, starting with the celebration series. So anyway, enough of that. Jeff, I thought it would be beneficial to talk about celebration and to talk about how, in a way, that's a rupture or a turning point in your career, because the work changed a little bit in the sense that new themes came into the work. For example, celebration dealt very much with a universe of children and of a kind of innocence. And I thought maybe you could start by talking a little bit about how this series evolved, and maybe speak about some of the themes that people might not be aware of beyond the iconography of the series.
Okay, Allison, I want to do that, but I really want to let everyone know I'm really thrilled to be here, and I know that when I went to art school, different people sometimes would come to my school, Jim Nutt, Fairfield Porter, different people, and so I always really enjoyed it, so I'm really thrilled to be here. And I'm really happy to be in Venice. But my celebration works were works that I made in New York. And up until celebration, I was making a lot of works in Italy. I spent a lot of my time here. I would stay at the Monaco Hotel, and I'd go out to Murano, and I'd work on glass pieces. I was also in the Valle Gardena in northern Italy, making a lot of wooden sculptures. And in the 80s and early 90s, that's where my studio was, in different artisans' workshops. But I really resettled the studio and my art production into New York in the beginning of the 90s. So I was overseeing the development of the models. I had my first son, Ludwig, and I wanted to make objects that were based in celebration. They would communicate in archetypal manner. So like Balloon Dog, I think of as like a Trojan horse. But yet I wanted these works to, even though very luxurious in an abstract way, a surface, not luxurious as far as economics, but in visual abstraction, a very intoxicating work. That's the type of surface I wanted in these works, but they're made out of stainless steel.
Well, it represents a shift not only in terms of iconography, but also in terms of scale, because a lot of these works start working in a lot of the sculptures previous to celebration were at most at a human scale, one-to-one human scale, and Balloon Dog and other celebration sculptures were much more monumental, and it also inaugurated, in a way, this mythical production value that you imposed on the work. And I thought one thing that maybe the student public would like to hear is to know why those two shifts have become so central to what you do today, for example. both the production and the scale question.
You know, I always cared about production of my work. And, you know, I used to always make my works by myself, my equilibrium tanks or the new, my encased vacuum cleaner pieces. But when I started casting in metal in the mid-80s, and I went to a foundry and I would start to work with artisans, and I would leave something and come back and they would take it to another level in a process, I learned to be able to work with people, and that my responsibility of how to try to educate them what I was looking for. And I realized that the details that I was looking for in the 80s were all based on the object, preserving every imperfection or every perfection in an object. And then in the mid-80s, I realized that I didn't care about objects. I only cared about people, and that the people were really the ready-made, and their reaction to something and the importance, the value of something was only the viewer.
You're still making Celebration, so it's been over 10 years in the making, which we were discussing today is an important thing to take into account in understanding your later work, because it's the first, you used to work very much in discrete bodies of work that had a beginning and an end and a narrative, and this narrative of Celebration is much more open and maybe infiltrated the rest of the work. So, for example, paintings and sculptures happen simultaneously. There's also maybe something else that I thought, this is Blue Diamond, another Celebration sculpture that was completed more recently, correct? And Hanging Heart, which many of you have seen at Palazzo Grassi.
Can you go back to the diamond one second? The reason I made this diamond, in the Celebration series, it's really almost like a calendar year. And so I'll have an image. I did a painting called Cake, and that piece of cake could be a wedding cake, a birthday cake. The tulip sculpture that we looked at, that could be a symbol of spring. The diamond could be an anniversary. But that's just kind of a little more kind of one layer of it. When I look at the diamond, I really think that this is about the moment of creation. And it's when the sperm is attacking the egg, and it's being attacked from all over, and it's like one just got in, and all the information of life is starting to unfold.
I think that's that hints at something else that I was hoping that you would speak about, which is that many of these works are symbolic and iconographic and easy to read on a cultural level, but when you speak about them often, there is this kind of embedded sexuality in a lot of these sculptures. For example, Balloon Dog or Tulips, there's an anthropomorphic references within the formal composition of them, and perhaps you could talk a little bit about that, because I think that's something maybe the public is not immediately accessible to the public.
When I was young and I started to get involved with art to me was just, you know, trying to make a drawing of something or make a painting or a pastel and trying to recreate visually what something looked like in perspective. And then as you get a little older, you start to learn that art is something that can tie you in sociologically with things and into philosophy and aesthetics and all of the different meanings of how art can perform come to you. And you learn this through interacting with people. But art really is not a very important activity other than connecting you to yourself, and then hopefully you can have transcendence and it connects you to others. The most important thing in life is life itself and the procreation and the continuation of life. So a dialogue, a very profound dialogue in sexuality is just like one of the core things of having any just kind of involvement within your own life and your own participation with life.
So from here we move on to the next body of work, which is somewhat simultaneous because Celebration is still ongoing, is the Easy Fun series, correct? In which the imagery becomes, this marks the beginning of a shift that is really ongoing in your practice, in which you shift from singular iconic images distilled down into a singular object or a depicted two-dimensional image to more complex collage and layering process. And from this is an early Easy Fun painting. It's one of my favorites, actually. I remember from your Sonneben show. And these mirror pieces, which were animal head cutout forms, which in a way grew out of work of the 80s. I see them as an extension of some of those earlier pieces, to work such as this, which is the maquette for Split Rocker, which is also in the Pinot collection. Here we see it as a topiary sculpture. And I guess I'd like to just introduce, hear Jeff talk a little bit about what started this shift, what introduced this kind of advancement in your practice.
I realized that montage and collage, you know, is very important to my work. If you look back at even the Banality series, you can see that I was just taking different images and putting them together, maybe some banal image with more of a traditional image, or just bringing in and layering something within sculpture. But in the 20th century, collage is one of the most important vehicles. If you look at film, film is, you know, the connection of sound with a moving image, and it's just very important at the core of 20th century art. And it gave me an opportunity, too, to also layer art history. And in layering art history, it gives the artist the ability to connect, you know, to kind of his community, or, you know, it lets you connect to society, it lets the viewer connect to society and to our human history. And that's what layering is able to do. Picabia is really, you know, one of the great layers of information. And all this was very traditional, making statements about art history. The background, the hair comes from a Chanel ad where I just dropped out the flesh of the face and the shoes that the woman was holding. And it looks really, for me, it looks like the Mona Lisa, a reference to the Mona Lisa. And the eye is like Man Ray's metrodome. Is that the correct word?
Metrodome. Yes.
And the lips, Man Ray's lips. And corn, I always thought of Salvador Dali. Dali said he painted corn because when you put two kernels of corn together, it makes an ass. But it always seemed to me like a symbol of the 20th century of Western kind of avant-garde art.
Yeah, and it also seems that it's a watershed moment because the pop legacy, which you've always been spoken about, at least in like American museum and art historical circles, as being this heir apparent to Warhol and to the pop movement, but obviously with this work that you've been doing over the past decade, you've really injected so many other references and homages and sort of consciousness about other avant-garde movements, as you said, surrealism, also Dada. And another thing that's interesting in these works that perhaps this audience would enjoy hearing about is the process through which you go in making it, because unlike pop artists such as Rosenquist, who really use traditional collage, where the space stays two-dimensional, you're using often computers to drop out, to erase images, to create much more complex understanding of layers and space. So I wanted to hear you speak a little bit about that process.
You know, Rosenquist is an interesting artist, and if you look at pop art, he brought to pop art a different type of abstraction than anyone else. But Rosenquist's painting, though, is very, very kind of wet into wet. And wet into wet painting is it's a symbol almost of painting from the 1940s or 1930s. It's not based on the photograph. So the way, even though Rosenquist may use photographs and use form of collage, montage, to create his image. It's not painted then in a manner which gives reference to the photograph. I think today it's interesting to have that reference, because to trust in the image today, we only trust in things that have gone through kind of a pixelization or some form of printing process, that it's been duplicated and it's worthy enough to be duplicated. And so I think that my paintings have tried to deal with that to a certain degree.
It also seems that these works introduce another dimension in terms of how they're made, because there's a tension between what is a ready-made and what is done by the human hand, in the sense that some of this material that you use, as you said, are scanned from ads, like, or from magazines, like the bodies of models, or in the top left corner you have a little bit of a kind of food advertisement, but there's also an introduction of original material, material that has a personal source or that doesn't come out of mass media.
Can I just mention both of these images? This is called Prison Venus. So it's like an institutionalized Venus, or somebody that's institutionalized having a desire for some type of Venus. And in the center, the flesh is Pamela Anderson, but just her shorts are dropped out, her kind of bikini shorts, and then you see through it, this kind of sense of transcendence, of going through something. I also continue that over into my Popeye work, where objects go through things and don't. This is like a contemporary Mona Lisa too. That's called Pam, and again, she's just dropped out. Allison, I just wanted to say one thing in that. What's important in art for the artist is to be able to focus on their interests. And so, you know, I'll think about the things that I have interest in, and then you have to really focus on that. And if you do that, if you follow your interests and not imposed interests, but your own pure, true interests, and focus on it, things become very metaphysical. And it's magical, it's metaphysical, it's where all things connect. And so if I look back at that image, Prison Venus, it's a metaphysical image. It's where things are connecting. And that's what you do from the time you wake up as an artist to when you go to bed to the next day, and you just keep trying to project to connect more profoundly, and to let art be this vehicle which can connect you and your community as profoundly as possible.